The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and serving the Radio Reading Service by sponsoring or underwriting this program for at least 10 years. We thank you, Carter Glass. If you'd like to talk to them, they can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we are going to return once again to the April 2019 edition of Our State Magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is the ultimate Merlefest experience, 15 can't-miss spring festivals. Can't guarantee we're going to get to them all, but we sure are going to get started right now with Festive Spring. Merlefest, Wilkesboro Azalea Festival, Wilmington, Queen's Cup, Mineral Springs, Songsmith Gathering, Brevard, Shad Festival, and Grifton. Every year it happens all at once. The azaleas pop, the hills green, and suddenly porch swings and outdoor grills are back in business. Indoor life turns to outdoor fun, sometimes even before the calendar makes it official. That's because in North Carolina, springtime comes early and stays, well, if not late, then just long enough for us to celebrate it properly with festivals. From banjo pickers to pickle lovers, gatherings abound that pay tribute to the places and people that make your heart sing. Yes, there's a festival for that, too. And we're going to start with the Mighty Merlefest in Wilkesboro. What began as a one-off fundraiser for a college garden has grown into North Carolina's biggest, most beloved music festival. Every year, plenty of famous folk, plain folk, and a bit of folklore converge to bring Doc Watson's dream to life. Written by Tony Rahagan. The rain has stopped. The thicket of gray clouds that dumped more than 10 inches of water in Wilkesboro on Thursday untangled overnight, making way for Friday's sunshine to warm and dry this patch of the Blue Ridge foothills. Margaret Wilson stands outside her mouse-chewed, duct-taped 1999 Coleman Fleetwood Niagara pop-up camper to survey her family's campsite on the southeastern edge of the Wilkes Community College campus. Moravian Creek, which had swollen to sweeping flood mere feet from her fire pit, has retreated into its banks. Back to the knee-high tributary, where her children have bathed and played since they were toddlers. The camper and three tents are still erect and pinned firmly to the ground. That terrain, normally a mud hole after such a cloudburst, is relatively dry, thanks to the truckloads of sand brought in by the people on the adjacent campsite. Maintenance workers at the college who befriended the Williamses over the last decade, or so they've been perennial neighbors on these grounds. The Williamses and their friends came prepared for the deluge, packing tarps and plastic ponchos and umbrellas among the fiddles, guitars, and mandolins they play around the fire pit. After all, this is Merlefest. It rains every year. At least it has every year, save one since 1991, the first time Williams and her husband Dan made the 45-minute drive west from Louisville together to attend the four-day Roots and Bluegrass Music Festival that rings through these hills every April. that first visit. They sat in lawn chairs and watched Wilkesboro's native son, Doc Wells Watson, and his legion of friends pick through a vast catalog of country and what Doc himself calls traditional plus music. They camped among the pines, sweet gum, and poplars. Merlefest became their yearly vacation. After their two oldest sons, Walt and Noah, were born, the Williamses packed the diaper bag and towed the tots across the grounds in a red wagon covered with a makeshift canopy. In 2000, the Williamses met Jeff and Julie Zenger, who lived 3 miles from them in Louisville and had two children the same age as Walt and Noah. Both families homeschooled, so they organize frequent social outings. Merlefest became an annual highlight. They bought the Niagara to shelter the family. And as the children grew and siblings arrived, the Williams/Zenger campsite expanded into tents. One for boys, one for girls, one for overflow, until there was room for 13 people. 9 kids proved difficult for 4 adults to herd across a sprawling 150-acre festival, so Williams made Merlefest family T-shirts of neon yellow or tie-dye, a different color and design each year, to help her crew recognize each other in the throng of nearly 80,000 concert growers. Still, as the kids got older, the parents felt increasingly comfortable letting them roam the campus and play in the sand pits, blow bubbles, paint, or build boats at the scrap exchange that they would later race in the creek. This has always been a family place, Williams says. To keep the Merlefest tradition alive, the Williamses and Zengers have blown off late April school days and soccer games. Junior and senior proms and college classes have been skipped as well. Here, the kids are getting a different education. When Walt was only 2, he saw the Canadian folk band Leahy play the big stage. Transfixed by the fiddle player, he begged his parents for lessons, and a Louisville violin teacher waived the minimum age requirement. Noah eventually took up the guitar. Years of watching touring acts on the Merlefest stage, wandering past the picking sessions that sprout up there, plucking the instruments at the musical petting zoo, and singing around the Williams-Zenger campfire rubbed off on all the children, each of whom can now be proficiently strum a tune. They've all performed on the festival's Little Picker stage, reserved for young musicians. And in 2016, Walt and Noah played on the Plaza stage in the band competition. These days, the Williams and Zenger kids are old enough to plot out which acts and exhibits they want to see and then go their separate ways. But today, before they wander off, they gather at their soggy, sacred campsite, each clad in a different year's family T-shirt, playing their instruments and singing in sweet, descant harmony. Old string songs rooted in the rock and moss of these foothills, reaching for the clouds and the voices of children, some nearly grown. They understand the tradition, William says. We're proud of our home state, and they are carrying on that tradition. This is home for the Williams family. This is heaven. About 500 yards northwest of the Williamses' camp, over the hill past the creekside stage and across the college quad, lies an oasis. A rich patch of shrubs, flower beds, and shade trees, partially enclosed by serpentine brick walls, hides in plain sight the heart of the festival. Despite the proximity to several stages, the music visits the spot like a whisper in the wind. The garden's branches and stems, the walls with their semi-relief sculptures of musical instruments and animals, even the plaques identifying the art and flora, literally reach out to be touched. Their descriptions are written in Braille. This is the Eddie Merle Watson Memorial Garden of the Senses, its centerpiece rooted in a bed of fragrant Sacococa flowers, is a towering styrax tree with white blooms that emerge in late April. This garden, or rather the idea of it, was the seed from which Merlefest sprouted. The man who planted that seed back in 1988, Frederick William B. Towns IV, now stands amid his creation, decked out in a Merle Fest t-shirt with long tie-dyed sleeves, cargo pants, sandals, and a wide-brimmed hat that shades his bearded 65-year-old face. Towns is a horticulturist. He came to the college in 1973 to help start the school's horticultural program back when WCC was just three buildings and a bunch of bald cypress, river birch, and shore juniper. Towns needed some new plants. He envisioned more than a dozen themed gardens, a Japanese garden, a rose garden, a native garden, and a garden for the blind, filled with particularly aromatic and textured flora that stirred the other senses. The latter idea led to one of Towns' friends to suggesting appealing to the most famous blind person in the area, Doc Watson. Watson was a native North Carolinian, born near Deep Gap, a half-hour west of Wilkesboro. There, after losing the use of his eyes to an infection before his first birthday, Watson steeped his ears in traditional string music, bluegrass, country, and folk. He taught himself guitar and banjo and went on to become a prominent flat-picking figure of the folk revival in the late 1960s. In October 1987, Towns met with Watson and asked if he would play a one-night, one-man, one-time-only show the following April to raise funds for Towns' garden. Watson agreed on one condition, that Towns find a place in the project to memorialize Watson's son, Eddie Merle Watson, who had died in a tractor accident 2 years prior. Towns agreed. It was Rosalie Watson, Doc's wife, and Doc's daughter Nancy who had the idea of inviting some of Doc's musician friends to play a multi-day festival. Towns, who wasn't a musician, is said to have replied, "What's a music festival? And what kind of music do you play?" The first Eddie Merle Watson Memorial Festival was a two-day affair. Legends like Earl Scruggs, Marty Stewart, Chet Atkins, and Grandpa Jones played two stages, one an 1,100-seat auditorium and the other a flatbed trailer parked in a campus field. It rained a little both days. No one in attendance seemed to mind. The second year saw a permanent outdoor stage with a between-acts second stage on the porch of a 200-year-old log cabin reconstructed on the same field. The two-day schedule eventually became three, and then four. More stages were added along with more acts to fill them. In 1993, there were more than 26,000 attendees. By 1995, the number had ballooned to 38,000. About this time, a singer-songwriter named Kay Crouch wrote a letter to Towns asking when the next Merlefest was scheduled. The shortened name struck, with Doc and Rosalie's blessing. Merlefest quickly became a big moneymaker for the college, funding much more than Towns' garden. It paid for new buildings, hardware like the first fax machines, and the arrival of the Internet. The quad was even physically raised 6 feet to ease the flooding due to rain. By 2010, attendance had surpassed 79,000, bringing an estimated $10 million to the regional economy. But the festival has never outgrown Doc Watson's influence. Even after his death in 2012 at age 89, from the outset, Doc wanted the event named after his son to be a family affair, with events and exhibits for children. Kids age 12 and under get free admission. No alcohol can be sold or consumed on site. Early on, Towns borrowed the idea of other bluegrass festivals to send visiting artists into local schools to introduce students to music. County schools allow some students to miss class and attend the festival as a reward for academic achievement. Americana is known as an old person's music, Towns says. Here, young people are getting a glimpse of their heritage. We're giving them something beyond what many of their parents can give them. And from here, young musicians are finding their own path. But he wants young people to remain in the community, too. For that, Towns says, you give them roots and you give them wings. When 80,000 music lovers converge on a town of 3,500, things get crowded. Wilkes Community College's 150-acre campus is bustling at the borders with 13 stages and myriad tents for food, vendors, and activities, leaving just enough space for people themselves to move and stand and sit, and precious little room for campers and cars. Shuttling patrons efficiently to and from these off-site lots and campgrounds is a formidable task. Fortunately, Merlefest has a crew of young area volunteers prepared for the challenge. Throughout each day of the festival, scout buses line up at the curb along South Collegiate Drive, the main artery leading into the campuses. Some of the white buses are emblazoned with American flags, others with a simple blue stripe, but all of them feature a troop number. And today, campers heading out to the River's Edge campground on the east end of town are ushered by the khaki-clad scouts of Troop 340 out of Roaring River. Helming the shuttle is 64-year-old Gary Hoots, a former mail carrier and scout leader. Dum-dum suckers are laid out in a neat row on the dashboard. Hoots hands one to each kid who climbs aboard. Hoots is dressed in jeans and a blue button-down shirt. Sunglasses hide his eyes, and a thick mustache obscures his face, but the mesh in the back of his hat reveals a bare scalp. "My hair was blonde," he says. "Then it turned brown, then it turned loose." He laughs at his own joke, checks the back to make sure the seats are filled, and then reaches over to pull the door shut. The bus turns onto Highway North Carolina 268, and Hoots honks the air horn at another scout bus he passes. "I love meeting people," he says, "and I love the scouts." As the campers file out, almost everyone stuffs a wad of bills into the metal box by the door. Wake County officials, or rather Wilkes County officials, say that the tips fund an entire year's worth of activities for each scout group and cover about 75% of their annual operating costs. All day long, the buses shuttle visitors to campus, where 13 stages host more than 100 musicians over 4 days. At picking sessions, anyone can pull up a chair and play along. Dancing lessons are offered in a wood-floored tent. Music and history lectures, wood shops, and songwriting contests are held in classrooms all over campus. Outside, row upon row of vendors peddle everything from guitars to dream catchers to cotton candy. Off-campus campgrounds hold their own forms of entertainment. Year after year, campers reserve and return to their favorite sites. Buses shuttle them to shows and bring them back to recharge before the evening performances. A nap, a quick meal, maybe a beer. Alcohol, prohibited at Merlefest, is perfectly legal off-site for those of age. And fans are ready for round two. Even after the stages have shut down for the night, impromptu picking sessions break out like campfires all across the grounds, often rollicking until dawn. The most famous of these satellite mini-festivals is known proudly as Sewerfest. In 1998, when the Wilkesboro Fire Department asked to create an overflow campsite to raise firefighting funds, the town opened up the Wilkesboro Wastewater Treatment Plant 2 miles east of the festival. There are 500 tent sites, 150 RV hookups, 2 climate-controlled shower houses with more hot water than you could ever need, and 2 huge open-air reservoirs of soon-to-be-treated raw sewage. The faint odor that occasionally wafts toward the park does nothing to inhibit the campers. Sewerfest is known as the liveliest party in town. In fact, many campers come for the 4 days in April, set up camp, and never set foot on campus. Cecil Ford has been coming to Sewerfest for 10 years, but he hasn't yet been to Merlefest, or rather hasn't been there in years. "I come all the way from L.A., Lenore area," he says, referring to the town 40 minutes southwest. Ford's regular plot is right next to the treatment plant's entrance. "We're the first campsite you come to," he says. "We get to see the buses go by. We wave. They hoot and holler. Then they go back to playing." Tonight, Ford and his guitar huddle around a space heater beneath a tarp awning in the glow of a mechanic's lamp rigged with a plastic bucket light shade. Clear plastic spoons and forks dangle from the bucket, creating a backwoods chandelier. Ford and his crew, a bass player, a mandolin player, 2 other guitar players, page through a songbook of Patsy Cline, Johnny Cash, and Bill Monroe, and take turns singing. Dave, yells one player, why don't you stop standing over there looking sexy and come over and sing? One of the players is Brian Young, visiting from Ocala, Florida. He met Ford and Company here a few years ago while toting his instrument around, sitting in with different groups. But even for friends just from down the road, Sewerfest can be a reunion. During this weekend, Ford plays with folks from near and far. It's the only time we get to see them, he says. Savoring every minute of this jam session with his Merlefest family, he'll play well into the wee hours. And if things go as they usually do, he'll meet a few new friends who walk or stumble by to listen. The drunker they are, he says, the better we sound. Long Sunday morning shadows reach across Camp Williams. The air is thick with smoke from the fire that still smolders beneath a pair of charred logs, just hot enough to warm up a pot of coffee. Coffee, 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 Margaret Williams says, as if praying over her cup. Perhaps she's just trying to conjure some sort of caffeinated spell to spur on her campers, who, after a night of playing, singing, and s'mores, are a bit slow to rise at 8 a.m. The task at hand is tearing down and packing up. There's still a full day of festival left, but the idea is to be ready to leave directly after the final encore. Gradually, the children stir. The girls move a little faster to break down their tent than the boys. The boys' tent is always worse, William says, holding her nose. Her 16-year-old daughter, Anna, is particularly eager to be released from chores and let loose on the campus. Is your sleeping bag in your sleep sack? Williams asks. Have you got your capo? Yes. Where's your guitar? In the camper. By 9 a.m., everybody's up, gathering instruments, rolling up sleeping bags, collapsing tent poles, and sweeping off the tarps and tents. The chores are interrupted by the sound of amplified instruments echoing through the trees and rocky hillside. Musicians warming up on the creekside stage just a few yards away over the hill. Another tradition held over from Doc Watson is the Merlefest Spirit of Sunday Devotions. Doc himself used to sit and play gospel songs and spirituals for festivals. Goers who were away from their traditional places of worship. In fact, Doc's final such performance in 2012 was the last time the Williamses ever saw him. As church-going folks, the Williamses never missed the Sunday morning ritual. It's part of the routine, Williams says. It's part of what we do. The warm-up notes ring through the woods like a church bell. The children and adults know they've been summoned and head west toward the opening chords of Will the Circle Be Unbroken? By and by, Lord, by and by, there's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. Gravel crunching beneath their boots, one by one and two by two, the Williamson Zangers and scores more families climb the hill, stepping out of the forest shade and into the light. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And if you have any comments on our show, we would certainly like to hear from you. And now we're going to go to the beginning of the magazine and pick up something we often don't get to. We Live Here, Neighborhood, River Arts District. In Asheville, one of the country's, or rather the county's, top arts destinations, is itself a living gallery where creativity flourishes. Asheville's vibrant River District, River Arts District, wasn't always so colorful. The brick buildings along the French Broad River that are now home to restaurants, breweries, and studios for more than 200 artists were once abandoned industrial spaces that had been used for manufacturing and agriculture. Then, in the 1970s, businessman Bill Gosher bought some of those old buildings and began renting them cheap to artists. Soon, drawn by airy spaces and affordable rent, more and more artists moved into the neighborhood, each bringing something new and personal to the growing waterfront district. Today, the River Arts District is a nationally recognized tourist destination, drawing visitors from around the world. On any given day, dozens of working studios open their doors for curious customers to chat with artists and watch them transform paint, clay, glass, wood, and paper into stunning masterpieces. With the Blue Ridge Mountains as a constant source of inspiration, artists have embraced this diverse and welcoming community as a place to craft their own beauty. Some pictures and more articles now. In a former textile warehouse on Depot Street, Pink Dog Creative houses the studios for 27 artists, two restaurants, and the furniture store Sunnyside Trading Company. Now, these are very colorfully painted brick-fronted buildings. The first one is pink with some vertical white stripes. The white stripes continue, but into a very loud but not screaming yellow, and then an interesting shade of red, and then a shade of turquoise, I guess we're going to have to say. It's somewhat in the distance. Shop, North Carolina Glass Center. With works from nearly 30 glass artists on display, the North Carolina Glass Center boasts an impressive gallery, but its main mission is education. The nonprofit offers classes, workshops, and demonstrations in glass blowing, and flame working for all skill levels, and equipment rentals for more advanced artists looking to perfect their craft. And there's a photo here of a couple of workers at a table and some guests standing a sufficient distance away from the very hot glass. Hoffman Studios. Artist Michael Hoffman has collected a vast assortment of antique lace, some of it centuries old, to imprint on his porcelain tableware and vases. Customers can also bring in their own fabrics, like heirloom embroidery or lace from a wedding gown, for Hoffman to turn into deeply personal pieces glazed with his own house-made blends. And you see him here now painting a surface and getting ready to do some imprinting with it. And then there's some of his work stacked up to the side. They are some vases or holders for other things that are vertically shaped, and some bowls, etc. And you see the lacy patterns imprinted on them. Eat, the Bull and Beggar. Co-owners Drew Wallace, creator of The Admiral, and Chef Matt Dawes, formerly of Table, opened this upscale eatery in 2013. The European-inspired Appalachian menu features elegant cocktails, a raw bar and caviar service, but also casual Burger Mondays. You can also eat at the White Duck Taco Shop inside a cave-like refurbished Quonset hut down by the river. One of Asheville's most popular taco shops serves creative fare like roasted duck confit tacos with mole and apple cranberry salsa, Thai peanut chicken tacos, and southwest corn chowder. Or you can drink at the Wedge Brewing Company, a 1916 agricultural building. It's now home to more than 20 art studios, and the popular Wedge Brewing Company, where an expansive outdoor seating area allows visitors to enjoy live music, food trucks, and beers found almost exclusively in the River Arts District. Well, my friends, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, and I certainly hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. But for now, so long until next time.